morning! This is Felicia Day, Kinga Forrester from MST3K and author of Embrace Your Weird. And you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future. Push the button, Steve!
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 8th, 2019. I'm Steve Foder.
And it's starting to get scary out. Chip Hessenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You're right, Chip. It is that time of year again. It is spooky, creepy, kooky October.
It is. And it's getting dark really early. And it's dark when I wake up. Steve, I don't like this time of year. Bring back the summer.
I love this time of year. I absolutely love it. This is my favorite month other than November when I just celebrate my birthday for 30 days. But October is just that's my fun month.
Well, it's time to go get some apples then.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to go out and see the new Joker movie that is simply called Joker.
And it stars Joaquin Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Joaquin Phoenix and the entire cast, they did a great job at this movie. This movie is very depressing. It is about a gentleman who is suffering all sorts of mental challenges. Mental illness is very... It's basically the story of this until the very end where we get a different message.
Hmm.
He is not, Joaquin Phoenix is not a reliable narrator. The film, as you're watching, is not a reliable narrator. Hmm. A lot of things you think you're watching may or may not be true.
Hmm.
And they kind of reveal themselves over time. And it ends with sort of a message that they want to say. And These people who are poor, they're marginalized, they're going through all sorts of challenges and really don't have mercy. And that's part of what's going on with Joker is every time, or the gentleman who eventually becomes Joker, throughout the entire movie, it is just one negative interaction followed by another one. He's going through therapy. Is the therapy really aimed towards him, or is it just the time they're spending with the therapist? He's working, you know, there's bad things that happen during working hours. He gets set up by some friends of his that he thinks are friends, but may not be friends. And we don't know if any of this stuff is true or not.
Mm.
And all I can say is I don't know why this needed to be a Joker film. So why would the group that put this on feel that they wanted to pay royalties to DC or to Warner Brothers, who is producing... to produce this type of film.
Hmm.
This film could have been made about anything, any person going through these same challenges. I have very mixed feelings on this because I do not think most people would enjoy going on this trip with this gentleman, going through all the mental challenges he is and learning why he may have some of these mental challenges. But on the same note, it is a very poignant message that is being released to the world is that if you continue to marginalize the working class, the backbone of America, the people who are struggling right now because manufacturing could be leaving or any number of things, then this is the type of backlash that potentially could happen. And so while this movie takes place during the 1980s, there's a message for today too.
And you were questioning why it takes place in the 80s because the 80s was not a... 80s was a good time economically.
In the United States, I think that we were turning around. We were coming out of the recession. Basically, the entire 70s was a huge recession. When Reagan was elected, we still were in recession. But by the time the mid-80s came, we were booming.
Yeah.
Like an incredible boom. And anyway, that was certainly kind of an interesting way of looking at history. Maybe other parts of the world were struggling a lot more than the United States was at that time. This certainly was the heyday of the pinstripe suits and the BMWs and Wall Street type of Michael Douglas's character. So, I question a little bit of that. It doesn't really matter. The point still remains that for this movie, there is a group that, he has mental illness, but there's a whole group of people who are the working class and they're being ignored. Their needs are constantly being cut. And because they're not receiving the help, the argument is, it may not be the Joker, but the bad things that are coming out of that, which ultimately could be riots or any number of things, mm-hmm. Could be the result of it. I think there's a message here. I think this is a reasonably good movie, 60 out of 100. I just don't think that it's for everyone, and I'm not sure why most Americans would want to sit through a movie about mental illness like this.
And it doesn't seem like it's a superhero, supervillain kind of movie, so it's not for kids. This is rated R.
Oh, it is. It is.
And I don't know that it's for the middle-aged me who loves my silly adventures.
Joaquin Phoenix, certainly, you know, to step into Heath Ledger's shoes, mm-hmm. to step into Jack Nicholson's shoes,
yeah,
that's a pretty amazing thing. But there's no doubt that Joaquin Phoenix is one of the great actors that we have and we can watch right now. And he certainly looks very thin and gaunt and like a person who's gone through a lot of challenges. He took this character to heart. Very, very good.
So, okay, very, very good performance, but you're not sure that you would recommend it to many people.
No, I don't think most people would want to live through that.
Okay, how about the PBS special that you've been watching, Country Music? This is the latest documentary series from Ken Burns.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Okay, good.
And it's very, very long. Every show is like 2 hours long, so you can stream it on the PBS app, which you don't have to pay for now. Thank God for that. I don't understand why that was ever a deal.
Did we trade in our tote bags and now we get free PBS?
Who knows? Regardless, you can pull it right up on the app. You can watch every one of the shows. I usually throw it on in the morning as I'm getting coffee ready and all that stuff. You start from the very beginning where country music started, and you move all the way up to the modern group. I think my favorite person that's being interviewed the entire show is Marty Stewart. Marty Stewart looks like he's back in the 1800s. He's got this coif of hair.
It looks like Mozart.
Like silver hair.
Yeah.
And he's got like this, Andrew Jackson black shirt on, the old up high...
high collar?
Oh, yes. Huh. It is. And he's just an encyclopedia of music and country history.
Okay.
So we go through the Carter family where it all started. We end up moving up to Hank Williams and all that other fun stuff. We learn the difference between, you know, both types of music, Steve.
Country and Western.
They play both types, Steve. and we learn a little bit about where swing comes in, how country relates to jazz. And how the artists improvised during and just kept things going. We learned a little bit about the history of radio, which WLS stands for, Steve.
World's Largest Store.
And I wonder who put that together.
That was Sears here in Chicago.
Oh, Sears did. Well, Nashville's 50,000-watt station, there was only a few of them, was WSM, was We Shield Millions.
Okay.
That was an insurance company that put that together.
Okay.
And so... These radio stations were originally set up as a way to advertise,
whatever they needed to advertise.
Exactly. Sears obviously could advertise to everybody.
You could sell, like, little houses that they could send you.
Anything and everything.
That was Sears.
And so what we end up just learning a little bit about the American history over the last, 100 years or so. And country music certainly is the backbone of it. I think most people would enjoy it. Will you enjoy watching 16 hours of it?
It's a little long.
Oh, my goodness. It just keeps going.
But it's good information, right? It's a good documentary from beginning to end so far that you've watched.
Well, all of Ken Burns' stuff is interesting. It doesn't matter which one you pick up. All of a sudden, you're like, it's this baseball. This is about National Parks.
I love the baseball one. The baseball one was so good.
And National Parks?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, so
Civil War?
Yeah, absolutely.
The jazz one? I didn't watch the jazz one.
I'm Shelby Foote. I'm going to tell you a story.
Ken Burns is a master documentarian, and his style is certainly singular. There's a thing on iMovie where I can do the Ken Burns effect, because he invented this way of telling the story visually.
Well, you use a still photograph, and you move over that photograph.
Uh-huh.
And so, absolutely, there is a style to Ken Burns' material. They've got wonderful interviews here. You know, you're either getting the children or the artists themselves talking a little bit about the history of country music. In fact, there was one artist, and she had just moved to Nashville, and her job was like the Museum of Country Music or something. And she said it was like the greatest thing ever. I thought, oh my goodness, I got this job. And, you know, you're trying to become a recording artist. But what she really enjoyed was she learned the history, which means she learns all the music. All of a sudden, you got this body of information you can pull from when you're putting together your music.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it was fantastic. I recommend this one, too.
Nice. I have been watching. Okay, so we've talked about Pluto TV in the past, right?
That's right.
Pluto TV is an app where they have hundreds of channels, and they keep adding like 9 different channels a week. They added this week the Addams Family channel.
Oh, yes, they did. I'm sure.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can tune in to the Addams Family.
I know. See, tell us more about the Addams Family.
So I stopped watching Doctor Who and MST3K for like a week to just watch the Addams Family.
Well, and the Addams Family was one of the great black and white shows from the 60s. Certainly had great music.
Fantastic. Fantastic music. Great characters. The storytelling elements of this I can't keep my eyes off it. It's fascinating to look at what they were able to put together in the 60s, being this counterculture group that did the opposite of what you would think of as the normal thing, and it's incredibly entertaining.
Based on Charles Addams' cartoons, and which were always a little bit of, you know, counterculture.
A little counterculture, a little, hey, let's look at what we're doing and compare it to the opposite and see if we're doing the right things. And boy, the entertainment value on these. I just love watching these characters. Cousin It walks in and there was an episode that I watched where he was sick, and so they called a doctor in, and the doctor was like, I don't even know where to start. Where do I even put this thermometer? He sort of kind of finds an area that he thinks might be near the mouth of Cousin It and puts the thermometer in, and slowly the thermometer goes down into the hair, and they go, oh, he loves thermometers. They're delicious. And the doctor's just freaking out.
Eating a little mercury. There's no problems there, Steve.
Right. This, I love this. I love the culture of this. I love looking back at the idea of the Addams Family and that black and white. We talked about this a few Halloweens ago. Mm-hmm. The Addams Family and the Munsters were only on for 2 seasons, from 1964 to 1966.
And we watched them our entire youth.
And we have seen all of these stories, and they're still intriguing to me. I still will watch The Munsters or The Addams Family when they come on anytime. Pluto TV is the place to go for all that, even though I had to, you know, take Pluto TV off of the Doctor Who channel for a week.
Well, tough.
It'll still be there for me next week. Opening this week, there's some interesting movies coming out for October. The first one is called Gemini Man. This is Will Smith fighting against a clone of himself in a very near future.
Well, Will Smith is going to take all of Charlton Heston's old films and remake them. Yes. I mean, this is just, the passion is there, Steve.
The Charlton Heston of the 2000s, Will Smith.
Ang Lee is our director.
I don't know, man. I'm looking at the trailer for this one, and I've dubbed this Uncanny Valley the movie. The young face of Will Smith in this movie is just a quarter inch off of normal, and I don't know if I can watch 90 minutes of Governor Tarkin on screen. I don't know if I can do it.
Well, the French Prince.
I will go watch this movie. There's no doubt that I will support Will Smith in everything he does. The next movie is called Jexy. This is a comedic take on the idea of our personal assistants that live in our phones taking over our lives.
Hello, Google. Hello, Alexa. Siri.
some of those are the key words.
Exactly. All right. So Jaxie is the a personal assistant
yes.
on a smartphone.
Uh-huh.
Adam Devine loves his smartphone
uh-huh.
and creates a, well, this is a brand new type of assistant. There's affection going on there, Steve,
uh-huh.
and jealousy and all the things you could be afraid of. I think the story is ultimately going to be your relationship to your technology.
But this is the comedic version of that story, not exactly like the movie Her, the Joaquin Phoenix movie, where he
Correct.
Really did fall in love with his personal assistant.
Well, Jaxie seems very jealous, Steve, uh-huh. at least from this, at least from the trailer. This looks like the date movie of the week.
Yep.
Too Much Sterling's date movie of the week. There you go.
Adam Devine, Rose Byrne, Michael Pena, Wanda Sykes. Yeah, this one I think is going to be a winner. There is a new version of the Addams Family coming out this week. This is the animated version. This is the updated new type of animation for 2019. I look forward to this movie. I have high expectations.
50% of Too Much Scrolling looks forward to this and thinks this is going to be okay.
You think that this is just a children's movie that you have no interest in?
Well, they certainly took some liberties on changing the characters.
Uh-huh.
They went out and got a bunch of voice actors, but they could have just gotten random voice actors. I think they took away some of the spirit from it. When you watch the Addams Family on television, there certainly is any edge there, but mm-hmm. you know, the cartoons had a little more edge to them. This is the Addams Family. I'm sure they're looking to reboot it for the modern group.
It's going to prove you wrong. I've already bought my Reese's Peanut Butter Cups that feature the Addams Family animation on it, so I'm ready for this. There is a scary movie coming out called Mary.
Is it going to have Wookiee in it, Steve?
Yes.
Is Brett Favre going to show up at the end?
No, this is not something about Mary. This is just Mary.
This is about Mary going on a boat trip, Steve.
But it's not the Mary from There's Something About Mary. Although in this movie, there is certainly something about Mary.
There is something about Mary in this. Like I said, Steve. There's something about Mary. She's scary.
Yeah, that's, oh boy. The moment in the trailer where she is called the name Scary Mary. This is a frightening movie about a young girl who very well might be possessed by the spirit of a boat. The family goes out on a boat trip.
So Commissioner Gordon goes out on a boat trip.
Gary Oldman, one of our greatest actors, who's not just Commissioner Gordon.
He looks like Commissioner Gordon to me, Steve. I've seen Commissioner Gordon, and that looks like Commissioner Gordon.
Yes.
He's going to go out in the boat,
mm-hmm.
and then I think he's going to run into Mary.
Uh-huh.
And then Woogie will show up and try to save him.
Scary things happen from there. This is a classic base under siege kind of movie. There's nowhere to go. They're in the middle of the ocean, and terrible things are happening on this boat. I will probably not go to the theater to see this one, but my children might. This might be one of those scary movies that the kids will go watch.
Well, if they don't go see that scary movie, are there any other scary movies for us, Steve?
Yeah, it must be October. There's a movie called Polaroid. This is the story of a high school loner who finds a antique camera, as he says. It's a Polaroid from my childhood, Chip. I had this Polaroid that they use in this
movie. Well, the kids are all using this type of film now anyway in a different way. But you're right. This is a scary film about taking Polaroid pictures and then something bad happened to you.
Something else is extra in the pictures.
Steve, I'm looking for a slasher film. Tell me about a slasher film.
Your standard slasher film of the week is Along Came the Devil Part 2.
Well, we've been waiting for that, Steve.
A long-awaited sequel to Along Came the Devil. It's a slasher film. That's all you need to know. There's a movie called Lucky Day coming out. This is a safecracker who gets released from prison and winds up being shot at by Luke, played by, yes, Crispin Glover.
And this looks like a very Crispin Glover type of film, Steve.
It is a very Pulp Fiction, Get Shorty, not exactly Tarantino, but in that same vein, weird story.
So if Joaquin Phoenix couldn't play Joker, Crispin Glover certainly could.
Yeah. Very interesting trailer. Go click on that one.
Do we have any dance movies that make me want to move my body?
Yes. There is another dance movie coming out this week called High Strung Free Dance. This is a young choreographer casts a contemporary dancer and an innovative pianist in New York for a Broadway show.
Steve, does this star Dr. Quinn? Medicine.
Jane Seymour is in this movie somewhere. And,
of course she is, Steve. It's a dance film.
Do they have to win the championship competition to save the community center? Is that one of these movies? Yeah,
exactly, because the business is going to tear it down. Steve, oh, of course. That seems course like an 80s film. Anyway, this is all about dancing, Steve.
Yep.
And who doesn't like a good dance film?
John Lithgow from Footloose.
Steve, that's right. Steve, I've got my Birkenstocks on. I have a handful of granola in my hands.
Here we go.
The lava lamp is on, and I smell like patchouli oil. So tell me, is there anything that I could go to, maybe a documentary I could go and watch?
Yes, Chip. There's a documentary that if somebody had a Bluetooth in the theater, you would yell at them. The movie is called Fantastic Fungi, or Fungi. Did you say Fungi or Fungi?
Because
the joke
you can
is,
be a fun guy.
Is fun guy. That's the way I say it. Fantastic Fungi. Guy, this is a documentary about mushrooms.
Steve, I got together with some shamans, and we were talking about going on a trip. And anyway, I was just wondering, man, this seems like a great type of film. I wonder what this film's about. It's about the world of the.
It's about nature and earth and forests and people that go out hunting mushrooms. You didn't have the uncle that went out and hunted mushrooms.
Steve, it's not a plant and it's not an animal. It's somewhere in between.
Oh, send your emails to Chip Hessenflo. Oh my goodness.
This is about that crazy kind of world that goes on underneath us, man.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes. The one thing in the trailer that really got me was where they were talking about the mycelium, the linked nature of all of these plants, that under the earth, under the ground, there is a network that has a design that is like the internet to have communication between these mushrooms.
Well, they talk to you, man. They kind of bring you to different places and they tell you.
I give up. I'm not trying anymore.
Well, anyway,
the narrator on this is Brie Larson.
It's Captain Marvel.
Captain
Steve.
Marvel it's is
Captain
the narrator Marvel's on
gonna,
this.
Captain Marvel's going to take us on a trip. She's going to be our tour guide. Hey, listen, not all who wander are lost, Steve.
I'm going to buy this movie and make you watch it.
Book it. Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. Chip and I got an opportunity to sit down with Felicia Day, author of the book Embrace Your Weird, Face Your Fears, and Unleash Creativity. We had so much fun discussing creativity and motivation with her.
I'm a little half awake.
Are you?
Because I came in from New York, and then I had to get up at like 6 a.m., but that was 3 a.m. my time because I still hadn't adjusted. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little, I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is. It's great.
You went to the Mads show last night?
I did not. No, I wish I did.
When was that picture taken with you and Frank?
Oh no. Well, I had a signing last night in Brooklyn, and Frank came in, and I was like, I was like, hi, how are you? And I was like, I think I know him. I barely recognize him.
He knows your dad.
He does. They're best friends. It was weird. We had a real moment there.
That's awesome.
He looked really skinny. I was like, you look too great.
First of all, thank you for this book.
Oh.
This book, I'm a school teacher.
Oh, wow. What grade do you teach?
I teach middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, 11, 12, and 13-year-olds.
That's tough, man.
It is a tough part of your life.
Yeah.
And I produce the winter musical.
Oh,
so
wow.
I talk to those creative kids who need the motivation.
Yeah.
And I think that your book is going to become a part of my way
wonderful.
To motivate those kids to do it.
I always wonder, a lot of people are always asking me, hey, would my 11-year-old like this, or my 15-year-old, or my 9-year-old? I'm like, I don't know kids. I have one, but she's still growing. So I know definitely a 2-year-old couldn't handle this book. But I'm very curious to see what age range, because I wanted it to be for everyone, and that's why I didn't put any swears in it.
Well, I will agree, because I think that's, you got the smelly years.
I do have the smelly years.
The awkward smelly years.
The awkward years, yeah. Where they're discovering who they are.
Which is so important.
Part of my class is asking that question, who are you? And then the follow-up question is, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And your book really goes to that, finding out, embracing who you are, and then discovering what you're going to do, how you're going to make something with that person who you are.
Yeah, that was my intention. It's a little bit nerdy. It's really a hero's journey of like building your character and finding out who your enemies are and making sure you're like equipped against them and then training up and then finding your party and then going on a quest. Like, it really is kind of a little bit of a video game analogy under there, but I try not to wear that on my sleeve to drive the non-nerds away. But yeah, it's really important. And I think creativity, the whole point of creativity in a way, isn't really about what other people will like about it. It's really about, hey, what can I make and how do I learn about myself through that?
And growth.
Yeah.
Learning about yourself and figuring out what to do and how to influence the world. I talk to my students about this all the time, and I think you really nailed it in this book.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm sure you're a great teacher, but when we tell people those kind of things, like, they kind of like go over our head. We're like, yeah, be true to yourself. What does that mean? So that's why I wanted this book to be fun and playful and really irreverent and dumb sometimes, but that's okay, because then it'll surprise people into learning something maybe and doing something fun with it.
All of your little asides where you go, yeah, I checked Facebook 3 times in the middle of the sentence. I love that writing style.
It's true.
How do you define the creative spirit? And is that different than the creative process?
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, I think the creative process is one of work, and the creative spirit is figuring out what the spark that will get you over, that will get you through all that work and keep you going when it's really hard. That you gotta like, it's like your engine. You got, what do you have to rev to get you over the hard parts of like committing to the long term creativity?
It's very easy to sort of grab that spark and just not go anywhere with it. And you're right. I think you have to put in the work. And then you have to reevaluate that yourself.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of challenging.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that was what I learned the most about doing this book, is that I know I have a creative spark. I'd like to think of 25 ideas a day, but what do I do with them? And how do I know which one to commit to? And how do I see it through? Those are really the questions that have always plagued me, and I kind of wish this book had visited me when I was a teenager, because I would have actually made a lot more in my life, probably.
Well, a long time ago, you created an online series called The Guild.
Mm-hmm.
And what advice would you give your younger self about creating this process today?
I mean, I stumbled upon a lot of different things, and there's a whole chapter on regret and not regretting the things that you've done, because I'm really good at regretting, like, oh, you should have bought that dress, or you should have done that with your life, or you should have done that project, because that would have led to this, and then you would have been happier, theoretically, maybe, I don't know if maybe not. So I guess my advice to myself would be a little bit easier on yourself about being a perfectionist, because that's what really stymied me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I could have written a lot more. I could have been a little easier in just making the stuff that I made. I think I agonized over it, and I'm not sure that the agony helped me make anything better. It just kind of made the process a little more miserable for myself. So embracing that you have to be bad in order to get better later would be the best advice that I could give myself. I don't know if I would have listened, though.
Well, I remember that there was part of your book where you were basically saying, just throw it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have that ability to come back and edit later.
Yeah.
But at least you have a structure to start with.
Yeah, and this is the thing that I've learned in writing. Like, you don't know how to redo something until you get to the end. Because when you get to the end, you kind of realize the point of something and why you wanted to say it. And you're like, oh, that's why. When I was writing The Guild, I would go back and rewrite the first 30 pages 17 times. But then I'd have to go back and rewrite the whole thing from scratch anyway when I got to the end. Because I'd be like, oh, this is about that. I didn't know that until I got to the end. So really, just see it through and then go back, because you'll learn a lot more about yourself, too, in the process.
Is that Stephen King kind of, you know, we should send that over to him?
Stephen King.
So he can work on the ending?
Steve McQueen or Stephen King.
Steve McQueen, I think he's dead.
Yeah, he's
don't
very
send
dead.
It to him.
So if you send it to him, you're sending
King,
it to a dead person.
Yes, his rewriting process is very different from
very
most
slow.
Authors. And a very slow process.
He's not looking good right now if you want to go visit him.
No?
He's dead.
Oh, Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
Not Stephen King.
No,
Steve
he's
McQueen.
Not dead.
He's not quite dead.
No, Stephen King's
better.
Fine.
Sorry, it's
right?
Monty
Python don't spread any rumors.
We're starting it here. You talk a lot about anxiety and fear in your writing, and your book lays out some really good ways to get past some of those anxious moments. My students, I have a lot of kids who deal with a lot of anxiety. Getting up on stage is something that's very difficult for kids. What are some of your tips for being the best you that you can be?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an anxious person, and I see that in my baby, who's two. I'm like, I think my mom made me anxious. Oh, no, she's just automatically anxious, and she's a perfectionist, too. So I'm like, oh, this might be part of who I am, and I gave it to her. I'm sorry, baby. But hopefully I'll guide her through a little bit better than I was guided. And, yeah, all of us know that person who's like, they get up on stage and they have no self-consciousness whatsoever. I envy those people. Yeah, I don't know them.
I was about to point to me.
You were, yeah, and I love that. I love
being on stage.
I love the fact that you love that. That's just not who I am, but I know that I have things to say, and when I get over that fear. So my recommendation is that you just have to be aware and care for yourself, because when you put yourself in dangerous positions, you just kind of, you kind of like drill into that trauma. And so sometimes you just have to be like, I'm sorry, let me just go second, or let me take a moment, or let me do it this way and hold a paper in my hand. Sometimes you just have to give yourself those safety nets in order to feel like your normal self in those situations, and then eventually you can let that paper go. But if you force yourself to go out there without the paper and you have a panic attack, then your body's like, oh, my person who drives me is not safe. Get out. And then you're going to have trauma, which I have a lot of.
So let's talk about that for just a moment. If you're working with someone who has anxiety and really has some challenges, mm-hmm. what could a person do to help them get through that moment to be able to be the performer they want to be?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, I will love you and accept you even if you really bomb it. In a sense, right? Yeah. Because when we have that self-assurance, and I talk about this in my book, I have a whole big section on anxiety and fear of failure and things like that. And a lot of it, for at least me, is like, people won't like me if I'm not great, right? We have that. And I think that's, you know, just in, as a parent kind of reading about, you know, development and stuff like that. It's like when we're praised for our end result or our abilities versus who we are, we tend to place our self-worth in that end result, and that end result is not necessarily controllable by me. I don't know, you're gonna like my book, you know, you might not like it, but I can't.
I liked it very
okay
much.
Well, I'm not fishing.
Spoilers.
Oh, spoiler alert. Spoilers.
I read both of your books in the last month.
Yes.
And I love both of them.
Oh, wow.
Especially your little asides. The parts of you that are in that writing.
Thank you.
That absolutely putting yourself out there pieces. I look for that so much in any performer.
Wow, that's so nice of you.
I want to know who you are in your writing, and you absolutely nailed that.
Well, I think you nailed the fact that, you know, that's what's so important about our weirdness. Like, yeah. And weirdness is just what makes us different from each other. Mm-hmm. Like, one person's going to call somebody weird for love and anime, and I'm gonna be like, hey, buddy, that's normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're really into hockey, I think that's a little weird, but hey, that's just me. So weird is relative, right? And so if we embrace the things that make us different, we can really hone that voice that makes our creativity stand out. And whether somebody likes it or not, we're being faithful to ourselves, and that makes us inside feel a little more relaxed and accepted and loved.
And I think that caring, that real genuine caring, when you find somebody who can give you that, hold on to that person.
Yeah.
I genuinely care about my students. I want them to succeed, but I won't be mad at them if they are not able to perform the way that I want them to perform.
Yeah.
I genuinely care about them.
No.
And I was going to mention that, you know, as we grow through life, we can go and we can find our tribe.
Yeah.
So when you're in middle school, you are, maybe you find a friend, or maybe you find a few friends, but you head to college, and all of a sudden that world opens up, and then you head out to life, and you get this entire...
So you're constantly changing and growing, and that's kind of what the book is about. Like, we all go through transition. I talk about this book, and I wrote this book when I was transitioning from, just a freewheeling lady to a mom, and it really was quite an adjustment, and, you know, figuring out what I wanted to keep of myself, what I could let go of, what I wanted to become outside of her was a real challenge, and it really was the process of the book that really made me feel a lot more self-confident and self-assured as a new version of myself. And so, you know, whether it's puberty or going to college, or going to high school, getting out of college, turning 30, getting a new job, becoming a mom, like, retiring, like, there are all these periods in our life where we kind of have to shed a skin, kind of like a snake, and figure out, okay, I did that. What do I want to keep from that? And what do I want to, like, find something new in my life and put it in there? And so this book hopefully encourages that sort of introspection and self-discovery wherever you are in life.
So your book uses a lot of exercises to reach a person's creative energy. Why is it important to work out those creative juices?
I mean, I think, you know, we talk about self-care a lot, and that's, I think a lot of people equate that with going to the spa and getting a foot rub or a manicure or your hair done. And I like, those are great things, you know, but at the end of the day, we have to nurture our insides too. And to me, you know, creativity is the most ultimate care, self-care there is, because you're showing yourself inside, hey, I care about you. I am looking and nurturing you, and I'm going to let you out of me to show the world who you are. And let's see what that, what happens, whether it affects somebody in a good or a bad way. You know, I did a video several years ago about doing crochet, and this woman online the other day said, hey, because I saw that one video you did, I haven't crocheted since. She became a professional crocheter, and she has those YouTube videos now, and she teaches, and she has an Etsy store. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know that that creative impulse of me wanting to try crochet one afternoon would affect another person. Mm-hmm. But it did. It changed her life a little bit. And I'm like, mm-hmm. That's so important. I don't even know how I affect other people with my creativity, but it would never happen unless I did something about it, right?
And hopefully your creative endeavors are going out there and becoming their own thing and, yeah. and influencing all of those other people. Like this podcast.
This podcast, it exactly.
It might very well change somebody's
life. Someone could hate you and then go do their own podcast.
That's very true.
And then that might be an awesome podcast. That's or right. They might love it so much they're like, I can't wait to, you know, to yeah. spread this podcast around. And that could affect one person, and that person could become an author or, like, you know, a demigod. Who knows?
Well, as a mother, how do you encourage creativity, and how is this encouragement different than your professional creative partners?
Oh, well, I mean, my child is developmentally in a very simple time, and but she's also evolving constantly. And I just, my job is to not corral her or force her to be into something. I just offer her opportunities. And if she seems interested, I will reinforce those in a way that doesn't feel like I'm pushing her. I think it's kind of like a little bit of a narrow line to walk between, like, oh, you like dinosaurs? Here's everything dinosaur ever, but let's do everything dinosaurs. That's my impulse, right? But I don't want her to think that that's the reason I want to interact with her or pay attention to her, or like she needs to like dinosaurs for me to like her. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a balance. And so I'm just here to like expand her world to the point where something will spark, and then I just follow her interest wherever it takes her.
Well, in college, you study music and mathematics. And how do these disciplines encourage you to think creatively?
Yeah, I think music and math require a lot of discipline, and they also require a lot of creativity and just figuring out problems, you know, problem solving, how to play a phrase or how to do make a proof happen. And so it isn't necessarily considered the most creative thing, especially math, but there is a lot of creativity and also the self-discipline it takes to really look at a problem and figure out how to solve it from 10 different angles. Mm-hmm. That really helped. That's how I wrote this book, you know, especially with the exercises. I was like, how can I make these exercises interesting in a way that gets through what people generally think of as, you know, something about procrastination? And so being clever and going around the side door is basically my goal in life and also with this book.
So you say in the book that most of your advice in the book is from therapy and motivational posters. But how much of it is from your improv training, your creativity, your availability to just do it, just put it out there to see what happens?
For sure, improv is a big influence in my life because I discovered that there's all this stuff underneath, you know, all my inhibitions that wants to get out. And so that's kind of like, you're probably just a professional improviser because you just don't have that filter. But I got a very, very strong filter.
I have almost no filter, but yes.
Great.
As a teacher, I'm kind of on stage all day, every day.
Which is wonderful.
And I'm trying to give my students what they need and trying to think on my feet and say the right words. I'm always thinking about what are the right words for this kid in this situation. It's all improv.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a challenge sometimes, right?
It is, totally. But it's also just about knowing that even if you do something quote-unquote wrong, the mm-hmm. other people have your back, right? And so that's really where improv, you know, you just trust the people around you to, if you trip, they're gonna trip with you because mm-hmm. they're going to make it look like, oh, they meant to trip. Or they're going to be like, oh my gosh, how can I help you up?
Those are some of my favorite moments on stage.
Yeah.
Where something happens and the rest of the troupe just takes over and goes, okay, we're going to solve this and we're going to keep the audience engaged. We're not going to break character. We're going to find a way to work through this together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the truths is we learn to accept our inner geekness. Why is this important?
I mean, I think inner geekness is just what do you love? I mean, you could be a geek about anything, sports or trucks or finance. Dinosaurs or finance. I mean, God bless you. But I think, you know, finding your inner geek is just identifying the things about you that make you different. I think there's an exercise in my book that's like a toolbox. And you like, what do you put in your toolbox that makes you different? Go there when you want to create, because channeling one of those things, either whether through writing or whatever you're doing, that means you're putting a piece of your individuality in the creativity. And that's so much more important than just kind of trying to please everybody.
So Felicia Day, her new book is called Embrace Your Weird, and it's available everywhere the books are sold.
You can definitely get it wherever you want. Independent bookstores are great to support. I also recorded the audiobook.
Yes.
But it is available everywhere in North America.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Scroll with it.
Man, if you get a chance, you should go see Felicia Day. She is on her national book tour this month. You might know Felicia Day from The Guild.
The Guild, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Or she is Kinga Forrester on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Well, she certainly does have the nerds in their mind.
Yes. The queen of geeks is the phrase that she likes to use.
She does. Well, we'd like to thank Anderson's Bookstore for bringing her in to promote her current book. And obviously, we had a great time meeting her.
Yeah, and her book, Embrace Your Weird. I really recommend that you at least take a look at it. It's new this week. It's number one on the lists. Let's get our weird together.
And of course, the book is about channeling your creative spirit.
Right.
And using, you know, the things that you value to get more out of what you want in life.
There you go. That's beautiful. You should tell her that. Also, if you are around and you want to get more Mystery Science Theater 3000, because of course you do, the live tour is going across the country this month. Go to mst3klive.com for tickets. I look forward to the future, the not too distant future for Mystery Science Theater. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And I'm thinking about putting us on TikTok, because I think we should be that hip.
We are hip.
We're that hip that we say words like hip. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio, and you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm not square Chip Hessen.
We'll see you in the future.
Push the button, Steve!
Oh, God. I just died. You just killed me. I can't go to your performance this afternoon. I'm dead.
Good.
Oh, my God.
Don't drive home like that.